Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, January 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Our favorite bird experts are back. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here to share their birding knowledge with you and answer your questions. If you have one, call 800-348-2551. Yeah, 800-348-2551. If you want to talk about the birds with us, you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Try to avoid the pictures. That would be good. Nobody in the listening audience can see them. If you must, you must. But try to avoid it. VoxPop@WAMC.org or call us 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart and your birding questions are coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, here it is. It's 2026, and it's our first birding show of the year, and we welcome back avian experts Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's the regional reviewer for the premier birding site eBird. He's a traveler. Who knows where he is today? We'll find out in a minute. He's on the phone. And it better be a good connection, Guthrie, or you're done. Julie Hart is the project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. The number to call with your birding question is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Well, we'll start with the person in the room. Julie Hart, Happy New Year. Welcome to the show. What's happening?
Happy New Year. It's good to be back. Yeah, what's happening? You know, this is the time of year, if you're a really big bird freak, you're looking at all the rare gulls that come to our area.
Through here?
Yes.
Why? Why gulls? Explain.
I know most people just think, oh, it's a seagull.
Yeah.
But no, we get some species that breed up in the Arctic that come down in the winter. So we have right now, I think, something like 8 Iceland gulls in the region.
Wow.
We have a Gaucus gull.
Just stop for a second. How do you know you have 8 Iceland?
We counted them all at
How?
One time.
Really?
Yeah.
So they were together.
They were together.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
What else?
The Gaucus gull. They're both what we call white-winged gulls. So, yeah, if people want to.
Would I be able to spot a difference if I was just hanging out and I said, oh, look at that, a seagull?
Maybe. If someone pointed it out to you and you were really, like, paying attention, you'd see that there's no black on the wings.
Okay, so no black on the wings makes it a rarity.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Well, Rich Guthrie is on the phone. Rich, where are you?
I'm down south. I'm sitting on Jupiter.
Sitting on Jupiter?
In Florida.
Oh, Jupiter, Florida,
oh,
that
Florida.
Is.
Oh, good for you. So what's happening, buddy?
Yeah. Hey, well, I'm excited to hear all the good news coming from around the area up there, the listening area. And yeah, wintertime is a time for finding the unusual birds that don't come down, that we don't see but this time of year. The winter finches, the field birds such as snow buntings and long spurs, they get their name because they have long claws on their toes that kind of act like snowshoes. They can walk on the snow. And they live out in the open fields, those pasture fields that we have around the area, and along beach shorelines and the like. And the other rare birds that show up during the wintertime. So it is, as Julie says, a time for gulls and waterfowl and exciting, unusual birds.
Well,
birds we certainly don't get here in Florida.
By the way, what's the temperature now in Jupiter, Florida?
Oh, I hate to tell you, Ray.
Go ahead.
You sure you want to know?
Just go ahead.
All right. It's 80-something.
All right.
Out here, barefoot, short sleeves. And, you know, have to. The week ahead looks like it's going to be the 80s every day.
Okay. All right.
That's a little too warm.
Yeah, that's enough, right? We don't need to hear anymore. Let's go right to the
It's above freezing today.
Yeah, it is above freezing.
It is above
it feels
freezing.
Good.
Yeah.
In fact, I was out front a little
there
while ago
go.
With no pants on. That's how. No. All right. Roberta from
Salisbury. Okay, never mind.
Roberta from Salisbury, Connecticut writes in, I put my bird feeder out in late November, and for the first time ever, a large group of blue jays took up residence. Usually the feeder attracts a flock of goldfinch, which are fun to watch as their feathers brighten to a beautiful yellow. So far, only 2 goldfinches, appear occasionally, but they're crowded out by the Jays, Juncos, Chickadees. Is there a chance, and I'll throw this one to Julie, that the Jays will move on and give the Goldfinches a chance to return, or might have they moved on?
I feel like a lot of the Jays this time of year, if they're already settled, they're going to stay put.
Yeah.
What my recommendation would be, if she hasn't already done this, is to have a separate feeder just for the Goldfinches.
Right.
So you'd have a Niger feeder, and it would be at some distance from the other feeders where the larger birds are. They like to be, they don't like as much disturbance, and they're not as aggressive. And so that if you have that Niger feeder kind of, you know, 6 feet away from the other feeders, then you're more likely to get some
only
goldfinches.
6 feet? I mean, won't Blue Jays say,
better.
Oh, gosh, there's more food over here. Let's get them both.
No, Blue Jays don't go for the Niger.
Oh, interesting.
Nope.
Okay, yep. So there you go, Roberta. Thank you for that one. I'll throw this one to Richard P. Guthrie, who's in Jupiter, Florida. Don't rub it in. Yesterday, a beautiful hawk was perched in the redbud tree outside my kitchen window above where a suet feeder had fallen and where small birds and a squirrel were rummaging. Can you help identify the hawk? It was mostly gray and white. On its back were large white polka dots on the feathers. Can't find this in any of the bird guides. The white dots were evenly spaced, not speckled. Eventually, it flew into a barberry hedge where small birds like to congregate. And that's from Janet.
Well, it depends on size, Janet. Both of the excipitor-type hawks, those are the bird-feeding hawks. You know, that's their specialty. And they're quite well adapted for that. They live in the woods and they fly through the trees with short wings and a long tail that gives them maneuverability through all the tight branches. But they do like birds around the feeder. And from what you described there, it sounds like a young Cooper's hawk or sharp shin hawk. And size matters there. So the larger one is a Cooper's hawk. And there's a little overlap between the two, but the both ends of the spectrum, the smaller one is the sharp shin hawk. So a little more detail might be helpful.
All right.
And but I think that's what you got there.
Fair enough. All right, this one's for you, Julie. This is from Nick. I saw the only Junco yet this winter in the Catskills, and it was a bit portly. What is... Don't fat shame. Okay, Nick, don't fat shame the Juncos. Nick writes, what is the seasonal behavior of the dark-eyed Junco? And did I see the anomalous overweight one? It wasn't super puffed with the feathers. What do you think?
Really? Yeah. So my initial thought was, oh, it must have been really cold out and it had fluffed up all of its feathers.
Oh, interesting.
And they can look like they basically are twice as fat as they actually are.
Right.
So that's a pretty common phenomenon. You'll see that with all of the feeder birds this time of year. They're just trying to stay warm.
Yeah. So that's probably what it was.
Yeah. I don't know why that's the only
Junco in the Catskills.
It depends on, I guess, where in the Catskills, because they do come down to lower elevations in the winter. But if you're down like along the sides of the roads or a little bit like in the valleys, there should be Juncos all over.
Well, I mean, in fairness, the Catskills are pretty big, so I
yes.
doubt Nick has covered the whole thing. It's possible, but he also asks, there was also a woodpecker going to town on a maple branch during on and off snow. Is that a good time for bugs?
Can be. I mean, they're going all year round for stuff in dead branches.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll go in and get like all the larvae and stuff inside.
Yeah. Rich Guthrie is here. Julie Hart is here. It's the first burning show of 2026. 800-348-2551 is the number, and we will get to the phone calls after the break here. One more email, and then we'll take that break. Richard, I'll give this one to you. This is from Atik.
Sure.
Wishing you all, wonderful people, a happy new year full of joy and birds galore. Well, right back at you, Atik. Can you recommend good bird watching spots in the capital region during the winter? I'm looking for shorebirds in particular, but I'm wondering if they're active in this cold. Any good spots that you point out will be very welcome. Rich, I throw this one to you.
That'd be great, if only. And our area is not well known for shorebirds. We don't have that much habitat for them, and even less so during the winter. So good luck with that.
Okay.
The best places around the area for birds, though, there are numerous ones. And I recommend I recommend checking out the book Where to Find Birds in the Hudson Valley, or Birdwatching in the Hudson Valley. That's by Catherine Schneider. Dr. Schneider published this book just a few years ago, and I imagine it's still available on bookshelves in local bookstores.
Okay.
So check that out, and you'll find a lot of good places up and down the Hudson Valley where you can look for birds. This time of year, shorebirds, not so much.
Okay, Julie, I'm going to ask you this. Now, you brought up the gulls coming from the Arctic, and those are water birds.
Yep.
Why are shorebirds in short supply? I mean, if we have gulls, which are over the ocean,
yeah,
why not a couple of shorebirds?
Yeah, the gulls are more adapted to deeper water. So a lot of the water that we have that's open this time of year, because most of the rivers are and lakes are frozen.
Right.
But we have all of these dams in the capital region, and so you have that fast-flowing water, and so you have open sections on the rivers, and that's where all the gulls are hanging out. Shorebirds, in general, like really shallow water, slow-moving water, mudflats, that kind of thing.
You won't find those around lakes and such?
No, not this time of year. Everything will be frozen there. So the shorebirds are further south at this time of year. They're just not up here.
Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us today. We'll take a break. It's Birding, 800-348-2551. If you've already emailed in, and many more are there, we'll get to those again in a little bit, but we'll go to the phones in a moment. Booty Wood on the trombone there with the Count Basie Orchestra, Booty's Blues, here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Julie Hart in the studio. Rich Guthrie, who's in Jupiter, Florida, and he's being a little insufferable about how nice it is. We're going to let it slide. Let's go to the phones here, and Rich, we'll throw this one to you first. Tim is in Gill, Massachusetts. Tim, go ahead.
Yes, all summer long, I hear a bird calling. It's kind of like a hiss and a whistle. I thought maybe it was a hawk or an eagle calling for food.
Okay. Can you make the sound?
Yeah.
You sound like a 28.8 modem. Do that again. I think we're getting AOL again. Okay. Tim, that's very impressive. Rich, what do you think?
Thank you.
Yeah. Holy Toledo. Well, I'm going to go with red-tailed hawk. That sounds like the call that they give when you upset them, and they're kind of like trying to say, hey, leave me alone, I'm out of here.
All right.
Also, and I will add to that, a lot of young birds, a lot of young hawks and owls will sound like that as well. That's kind of their baby call. I'm hungry, where are you? I'm hungry. And it can be quite persistent.
Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, all summer long.
How long did you practice that, Tim? That was fairly good.
I've been hearing it for years. I never called in. I thought maybe it was a red-tailed hawk, but I wasn't sure.
All right. Well, thank you for the call.
Oh, good, man. You've done well.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here. It's Birding, 800-348-2551. Tim is in Rensselaerville. Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing good, Ray. How about you and Rich?
Pretty well, and I assume Julie's doing
Super
okay.
Dupa.
Yeah, are you all right, Julie?
Yeah.
Okay, everybody's fine. What's up?
I had a great surprise this morning. I have a feeder about 6 foot from the window, and an evening grosbeak landed on there for black oil sunflower seeds.
Ugh.
And I just happened to have taken the screen out of my window so that the pane of glass is beautifully clear. I got an awesome picture this morning.
Oh, cool. Wow. Thanks for not sending it. Julie.
Yeah, I'm jealous, actually.
Really?
They're beautiful birds. They're like yellow and black and white. And yeah, they're just beautiful. Their populations are really not doing very well. But this winter, there's a what we call a winter finch invasion. And so a lot of these finches that we don't normally see here, which includes the grosbeaks, are coming down our way. So there's been a few evening grosbeak and actually some pine grosbeaks coming into this area. Not too many yet, but I've heard of a few.
Where are they coming from?
There should be more. From up north.
Yeah.
Yeah, from Canada.
Yeah,
from Canada.
So the evening grosbeak is in the night, or is it just in the afternoons? Why do they call it the evening grosbeak?
You know, I don't know why they call it that.
But he saw it in the day, right?
Yeah, they're diurnal birds. Yeah, they're out during the day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Rich, why do you think they call it the evening grosbeak if it's out in the day?
Well, they go even beyond that, right? The scientific name is Hesperifauna, which is afternoon call. Let me see, Hesperifauna asper. Oh, yeah, it'll come back to me. I had it right on the tip of my tongue.
I'm not.
But in any event.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I can suggest they are a beautiful bird, golden yellow and jet black head and white. And the females are kind of dull. They look like an oversized goldfinch, a female goldfinch. They're kind of like that dull yellow orange coloration, but they have a huge bill. Grosbeak just does not do them justice. It's
wow.
a grossly beak.
Well, Julie just showed me a picture and it's gorgeous. I got to say, that's a gorgeous bird.
It is.
All right, Tim, you want to follow up here before I dispatch you?
Well, one of the great things about grosbeaks in general is that they don't act flitty like other birds. They are very calm and they just kind of spin around slowly and look at you. They don't fly away. I'm very used to the red-breasted grosbeak?
Rose-breasted.
Yeah, rose-breasted.
Okay.
But now I haven't seen one this winter, but now I've got to keep an eye out for the pine grosbeak, apparently.
Well, thanks for the call, Tim. What, Julie, what does a pine thing look like?
Pine grosbeaks, they're similar size to evening grosbeaks, so they're pretty big, but they're more gray with red on the head.
Oh, cool.
And also a big fat bill.
And do they like to be in the pines?
Where you really see them in the winter would be at like a crabapple orchard or some place where there's a lot of fruit still on the trees that's like fermented and you know, gotten a little easier to digest.
So let me ask you this. Who the heck was naming these grosbeaks? You have an evening grosbeak that's in the day, and you have a pine grosbeak that goes to crabapple trees.
Yeah,
what's up with that?
Don't get started on that. There's a lot of misleading names out there, yeah.
Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us today. It's birds, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. And my word, we have a ton of emails. So I'll read one here, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Jeff, who is in the 413 out Williamstown way. My boss, an avid birder, has noticed an immature male Bullock's Oriole at his feeders over the past few weeks, and we were wondering what could explain such a lengthy stay so far from its natural range. Rich, any ideas?
Well, that happens. First of all, if it's a female Bullock's Oriole, which is a Western species, incidentally, they do wander. And it's a strange thing about the Orioles. If they're here this time of year, the chances are they're going to stay here and feed in the backyard feeder. They like grape jelly, by the way, and other food offerings like that. But pictures, because they look very, very similar. Now, both of them are very rare this time of year, but they look very similar to the Baltimore Oriole female. So there are some subtle differences between the two. And I know the folks over there in Berkshire County will love to know which of the two it is. Either or both, it will be noteworthy for them.
All right, fair enough. And Julie, are you also somewhat skeptical? Rich obviously is, you know, a little skeptical here.
Yeah, I my first thought was, oh, it's more likely to be a Baltimore Oriole because they sometimes do overwinter, a few of them. But, you know, this time of year could be either.
So you got to have pictures.
You got to have pictures.
Otherwise, they cast a jaundiced eye upon thee. Let's go to Jim, who's in Albany. Jim, you're on. Hello, Jim.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm a recent birder that got dragged into with the Merlin app on my phone. Love it. A couple of questions with it. One, what are some ways to use Merlin to augment my birding? Two, how accurate is it? Because sometimes it's identifying sounds, birds that I hadn't seen. And three, here's the weird one. I was recently at a farm and I was trying to identify some chickens, and it looks like Merlin doesn't think chickens are birds. I'm curious if birders think chickens and other domesticated fowl are birds.
That's a great question. And you know what? Let's not discriminate. They're birds, right, Julie?
They are birds.
Okay.
They do not count for most birders as, you know, because we're mostly interested in wild birds.
Uh-huh.
So if it's a captive bird, if it's an escaped captive bird, if it's a domestic bird, we generally don't really consider those.
Okay.
So that's what's going on there.
All right, fair enough. Jim, you want any more time on the air here?
Yeah, he has a couple other questions,
does he?
How I can use Merlin to augment my birding.
All right, Julie.
Yeah, so Merlin is a great app. It is pretty accurate. It is not faultless, but it is really good. And one of the ways that you can use it is to turn on the sound identification when you're hearing a lot of sounds, and then take a recording and have it identify it for you. And then once you can click on the name and
right.
you see a photo of it, and then you kind of know what you're looking for.
Right.
So then you can try to look for the actual bird, you know, kind of hone in on where the sound is coming from and confirm that ID for you. And that does a couple of things. One, it reinforces the sound to the image of the bird, what it looks like. It helps you figure out also like what kind of habitat that you're going to find that species in too.
Right.
So it's teaching you a bunch of things at once. It's
all
fun.
Right. Jim, you get one more teeny tiny question and then we move on. Go ahead.
No, I'm good. That was great. That's exactly what I'm doing, and it's a lot of fun, and thank you.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Birds with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. This one for you, Rich. This is from Mark in Lake Katrine. How do I deter starlings from visiting my feeders? A few will eat all the seeds in a minute. Native birds will get almost none. Help. And that's from Mark in Lake Katrine.
Oh, good luck with that.
Oh, boy.
Mark, oh, boy, is right. You can change the type of bird feeder that makes it difficult for starlings to perch, such as the one that Julie recommended earlier, and that is a tube feeder or sock feeder that has Niger seed in it. That will be good for the goldfinches and the redpolls, and if you get any siskins in the area this winter, yeah, that will work. And then the other thing is change the type of food. Starlings don't like everything they have, surprisingly enough. So you can go to safflower seed. And if you have a suet feeder, look out. They love that. So I would change the type of feeder, change the type of food. And perhaps if things just don't settle down, give it a little pause.
Okay.
You know, they're impatient birds. They'll move on, let's hope. And then you could bring it back to the blue jays and goldfinches and cardinals and all the good stuff.
It's Birding Today with Rich Guthrie, who is in Jupiter, Florida, the lucky dog, and Julie Hart, who is less lucky, in Studio A with me. The number is 800-348-2551. Denise is in Chicopee. Denise, you're on.
Hi. I have a question. I was house and pet sitting in Holland, Mass., which is out by Sturbridge over Christmas, and looked out at the bird feeder in the backyard, and lo and behold, there was a bluebird. I was so odd at that. I didn't think that there were any that would overwinter here. I looked in a bird book that I had, and it sure enough was a bluebird.
Amazing.
But I'm curious as to how often that happens.
Okay, Julie Hart.
That's great. They're, you know, beautiful birds. a few of them do hang out in the winter. They generally are moving around. They're usually in like small little family groups. But there are some that do hang out in the winter. They're not as many as we have like in the breeding season because it's not as hospitable. But there are a few around. So
what do you think, Denise?
Lucky.
Well, I was just really awestruck that it was there because I had never seen one in the winter. And my brother and his wife have a pretty wide range of seed in that. But I just was curious as to how often that happens.
Okay. Well, Denise, thank you very much for that. Now, Julie, very quickly before the next call. Sorry, you know, I've been doing the bird show for years. I should know better. But what's the difference in looks between a blue jay and a blue bird?
Oh, a blue bird is a sky blue color on the back. But then their belly is like a nice rusty red and white on the lower part of the belly.
I don't think I've ever seen one.
Oh, yeah. They nest in cavities. They're smaller than a blue jay. So blue jays are blue, white, with a little bit of black here and there, have a big crest, the big white belly, and they're very loud and obnoxious.
Can you make the sound?
No, they make so many different sounds. And
really?
They just like squawk and they're, yeah.
Are they part of the mockingbird tree? Are they?
No, they're not part of the mockingbirds, but they are, they make a lot of squawks and gurgles and... I don't know, just like a bunch of weird
cool
little sounds.
So, I mean, you live fairly close to where we live.
Yeah.
Is that in our area? Well, I mean, why haven't I ever seen one?
They need a little bit more open area. So they need like fields and things like that. And so if you go to like Five Rivers, for example, there's lots of them breeding there in the fields there. So,
all right, let's go back to our phone lines. Grab one more here before the next break. It's Birds with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. And let's go to, looks like, Fred in Northampton. Fred, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Welcome.
Well, okay. Hey, I've got a couple of questions, if that's okay. And the last call just triggered this for me. Bluebirds and nesting. They're not actively nesting right now in the Northeast, are they? Because we're watching them through our feeders, and I usually clean it out, the boxes, at the end of January or so, but they've been hanging out, going in and out of it. They're not preparing it for this year yet, are they?
Rich?
No, thank you. That's they're holding up for the winter. They actually do go back to nest holes. Woodpecker holes or a nest box that you have out there. And what's really fun is they kind of go in there as a bunch, and you can have four or five, maybe even eight bluebirds cuddling up inside that nest box for the winter, staying warm, sharing the space. And then when springtime comes, they'll scatter around and they'll go on into their separate pairs where they'll set up territories. And I might add that bluebirds are one of the few that will come to a bird feeder. Bluebirds are one of the few thrushes. They come to a bird feeder, they'll eat bird seed, and they especially like mealworms if you have those available. So there's that.
Right.
And before we go on, I want to mention, Ray, to the audience, we had one of the listeners send me a photograph of a woodpecker at his feeder.
Yeah.
And he said this was larger than the other ones and was very curious. And it was an unusual woodpecker for this time of year. And it was actually a yellow-bellied sapsucker that will come to a suet feeder in the winter. They hang around, and a few of them overwinter in our area that we get them on our Christmas bird counts. So I just wanted to share that out there. And now I think we had a couple other questions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's do one more, Fred. We're about up on a break, but go ahead. Ask another one.
All right. Snowy owls this time of year, I mean, in the region, how many are we expecting, looking at, you know, reports out there? I don't go extensively into the sightings to see data, but how often are they around now? the snowy owl.
Okay. Go ahead.
You're speaking about the bluebirds?
Snowy owl.
Snowy yeah. owl. Oh. Snowy owls, Rich. Julie, go ahead.
Oh, snowy owl. Oh.
Yeah. So they vary from year to year depending on how well they do on their breeding season and how many young they're able to raise, and then depending on the winter weather conditions up north. I have not heard of many. It's not a good year for snowy owls as far as I have heard.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know, honestly.
Okay. All right.
Rich, have you seen any coming through?
Rich?
It's all about food. If there's enough food up north, they're going to stay put. No reason to leave. They can handle like up north weather, winter. So, but when food crashes, when the lemming population goes through one of their downsides of their population cycle, they come down here and visit us.
Interesting. All right, Fred, we're going to have to leave it there. We need to take a break. Julie Hart is here. Rich Guthrie is here. It's Birds, and we'll be back. Quincy Jones and the orchestra doing the old Mingus Boogie Stop Shuffle here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Birds with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. And we have so many of those. Let's grab a few now. Dave writes in, I've been attracting birds to my yard in LaGrange, New York, Dutchess County, for many years. This year, on Christmas morning, I had about 50 red-winged blackbirds at my feeders. I've never seen this in 31 years I've lived here. Is this unusual, Julie, or is it, you know, normal?
I feel like it's becoming more common. And this year seems to be a pretty good year. There's a lot of little groups of small flocks of red wings, also starlings and some of our other blackbirds.
Yeah.
I'm still seeing groups of them hanging around this year. So I wouldn't say that it's unusual for this year, but I think overall, like, it is becoming more common.
Even at this time of year, it's...
Yeah, I think that, you know, our winters aren't quite as harsh as they used to be, and so a few of them are hanging out.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, thanks for that email. John writes in, it's a twofer. First of all, Happy New Year's to all, says John, and right back at you. One, Rich Guthrie, you handle this one. Do all small Northeast birds catch food? In other words, save food?
Yes and no. Not all, but many do. And examples of that are black-capped chickadees and nuthatches and some of the other feeder birds. And during the summer, if things are good, the warblers and other insect-eating birds will stow food away. And this is why the woodpeckers like to follow around chickadee flocks, because as soon as the chickadee hides a kernel of a nut, the woodpecker's not far behind helping himself. Just raiding the cupboard.
Well, who knew? All right, second one. I've been watching a single Carolina wren since midsummer, an apparent mate, nest built and nest sat earlier in the year as well as last year. Today, for the first time, I saw a second Carolina wren feeding on bird food put out not far from another Carolina wren. Does their proximity inform that they are opposite genders and possibly mates, Rich?
Not necessarily so this time of year. I think they may be more tolerant to a visitor from an adjacent territory nearby. They're not exactly social, but I would go along with your suggestion that they're a bonded pair, staying together through the winter. But a newcomer is not out of the question.
Okay, this one is from Betsy, who first of all says, enjoy Florida, Rich, envious. You know what, Betsy, don't encourage him. But I'm sure it's taken in good spirit. I finally saw a pair of cardinals. Haven't seen any all year so far. I'm hanging suet cubes as well as seed in several feeders. Julie Hart, do they prefer any specific types of food? I'd love to keep these guys around. And that's from Betsy.
Yeah, cardinals are going to go after sunflower seeds. That's their favorite. Yeah.
What do they
eat? They're not going to go for suet at all. That's just not something they do. But sunflower seeds, yeah.
I haven't seen that many cardinals lately, but I really haven't been looking. We get tons of them in my neighborhood. What do they generally eat? I mean, we don't have a lot of sunflowers.
So they have that really big fat bill, right?
Yeah.
If you've noticed that. So that's designed for seeds. So they're mostly eating seeds.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's what they so, that's what they go for.
Okay, but sunflower they really like.
Yep, they really like sunflower.
All right, one more email for now, and then we'll try to get loop back and get some in later in the program. Lisa writes, on one of the coldest days so far this year, I was at the kitchen sink, and darned if a gaggle of bluebirds didn't come to the feeders. I had not changed the food. It was probably 12 degrees outside. I seldom see them, even in the warmer temperature. I live in Saratoga, across from a large golf course that has marshy, now icy, plains and lack of cover. Just wondered if this is a regular thing. It surely is not at my house. Happy New Year, everyone. And that's from Lisa. Rich, what do you think?
Well, that's wonderful sighting that you report there. And it, as Julie said earlier, the bluebirds will gather up in small family, extended family groups, and wander around together through the winter. And they are, as mentioned, they are occasional birds that will come to a bird feeder and actually eat bird seed. So, yeah, that's right along their MO. And congratulations. You seem to get the prize for bluebirds.
Okay, let's go back to our phone lines. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us. It's the first birding show of 2026. Phil is in Pittsfield. Phil, you're on.
Hello. Santa Claus was very generous to me. I got a high-tech bird feeder.
Ah, cool.
It has a camera, and it has an AI property to it that will identify the birds as they land on the perch.
Wow!
I'm looking for advice. I'm looking for advice on placing it. Obviously concerned about squirrels, and we have the rare but occasional bear that I don't want to see attacking this.
Yeah, it's a great point. Julie Hart, what do you think?
Yeah, so it's winter, so hopefully the bears aren't a problem right now. So you're probably safe for a few months. In terms of placing it, so generally you want it to be far enough away. Well, actually, there's two rules. Either it's really close to your house, like within like 6-10 feet of your house.
Yeah.
Maybe 6 feet. Or you want it to be farther away, like 30 feet away from your house. Because if you have a predator that comes through, you don't want them to run into the windows of your house and kill themselves.
Yeah.
Right. So that would kind of be defeating the purpose. Another consideration, too, is to keep it away from bushes and trees a little bit, because there could be a predator hanging out. So if you were to put a feeder right next to a shrub, a dense shrub, you probably wouldn't get many birds because they would be afraid that there could be a predator in there that would get them. So you also need to have it. So for me, I have a small fenced-in backyard, and I have my feeders like out in the middle. And that way you're not going to have – also, I've had it in the past. I've had squirrels that go climb up the trees and then like glide down, like jump and like
the flying squirrel,
the flying gray squirrels that will try to get at your feet.
So, before we let Phil follow up here, let me follow up. And you said, you know, 6 feet from the house or
30 feet
further away. Why not that middle ground?
Because that's where they can pick up enough speed. And they may not see that there's a window there. They might think that they can fly through it, and they'll pick up enough speed and they'll hit your window.
I understand.
If it's farther away, they'll be able to go around your house without trying to think they can go through it.
Phil, you want to follow up here?
Yes. Unfortunately, there's no trees within any reasonable distance of my house.
Okay,
so
that's good.
The only option I have is to mount it on the house.
Oh, on the house. Okay, you can do that, or you can use like a shepherd's hook as well.
A shepherd what?
A shepherd's hook. So it's just like a big metal post that you put out in the middle of your yard.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I didn't understand what you said.
Yeah.
Yep.
There you go.
Shepherd's hook.
So, Phil, this thing's pretty cool, though. I mean, it's got AI. Julie, have you seen these before?
I haven't used one, but there's a lot of people out there using them nowadays, and I hear they're pretty accurate as well. So, and I don't know if yours takes pictures, but sometimes they take pictures as well, and Like, it's just, yeah, it's crazy.
It does take pictures. It has a micro SD card for storage.
Amazing.
Nice.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Phil,
yeah.
Thanks for the call. Rich, have you tried those?
I've seen them, and yes, they do work. But one thing I found out is that if you thought Merlin made mistakes, these things are even wilder at mistakes. I've seen some bizarre identifications that were attributed to some birds and way off base. But with time, I suppose that the algorithms will improve and the identifications will become more accurate. So I give them maybe 45-50% accuracy, whereas Merlin is more like 95%.
You are a tough critic, Rich Guthrie. Julie Hart is here as well. It's Birds, 800-348-2551. Dora's in Washington. Dora, you're on.
Hi. I've been feeding birds for many years, and I saw something yesterday, maybe the day before, that I've never seen before. I had a huge flock of blue jays, and they were all gathered in one or two of the bushes out behind my house. And they were kind of chirping at each other. You know, the blue jay shriek is pretty obnoxious, but this was kind of a chirp. And they were all bouncing up and down, up and down.
Yeah.
As they were like chirping to each other. It was the most amazing thing. There must have been between probably more than 24 birds.
Wow. That's awesome. I see a
similar.
I was
just wondering what you could tell me about that.
Yeah, I've seen a similar behavior. I usually only get like, I don't know, 6 or maybe 8 in my yard, but they'll do the same thing. Like one of them will come in close to the feeders and then they start making this like kind of moderate sound. It's not too loud, not too quiet, and start doing that bobbing up and down, like you said. And then I think that he's basically telling the rest of his gang that there's food over here, come over here. And so he's just, yeah, like getting everyone to come in and steal all the bird food.
Well, what was amazing was that they were all doing it at the same time in the bushes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's YouTube gold. You got to get that on video.
I wish I had.
Go ahead, Rich.
I like to call that their happy sound. And they bounce up and down, like you're saying. They kind of go
as they're
bouncing around.
Yep.
And I used to call it back in the day, that I used to call it the clothesline sound. It sounded like a clothesline being pulled in, you know, the squeaky clothesline.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Well, Dora, thank you for that one. And Rich, could you make that sound one more time before I go to the next email?
Oh, it hurts. Okay. Doodle-loo. Here we go. Okay,
oh, Ray,
you very good. You got it, right?
Eileen and Colony writes, Happy New Year. Your guests note that some birds like fruit jams or jellies, but if you put that out in the winter, won't it freeze? And then when birds try to lick it, their little tongues will get stuck like on A Christmas Story.
Oh.
Is that true?
That would be horrible.
Yeah, that'd be bad. I like that. That's
negatory.
All right, fine.
Yeah. I think there's enough sugar. There's enough sugar in there that it won't be as likely to freeze. It'd have to get a lot colder to freeze.
Barb in North Greenbush says plenty of dark-eyed juncos in my backyard in North Greenbush.
Yeah, like I said, they're all over at these lower elevations in the valley. So, yeah.
Okay.
It should be.
Here's one, Julie, that I'm going to throw to you. It looks like it's a kind of a science question. You ready?
Okay.
I watched a video that explained that male cardinals get their red color from the red pigment in the berries that they eat, but blue jays have no blue pigment in their feathers. The color is an optical illusion that comes from light refraction, and it was demonstrated that blue feathers chopped in a... Well, this is terrible. Blue feathers chopped in a blender look brown because they are brown, and the iridescence of pigeon feathers is also an optical illusion. Is this true, or am I embarrassingly gullible? And that's Farmer John.
I believe that is true, yeah. And so there are some birds that have the pigment, like, naturally in the feathers that gives them the color. Some are, as he says, like an optical illusion. It's the way the light is refracting. And then others, they get it from their food. So, yeah, no, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rich, I'll throw this one to you. It's Mike in Saratoga. Happy New Year. Last week, I was looking out my window here in Saratoga Springs and saw a New York State bluebird in a bush. Is that bird here for the winter or just passing through?
Yes, it's here.
And they do over a few of them do overwinter. Now, what's interesting about them is that they've always overwintered. But back in the day, there were so few bluebirds to begin with that we just didn't see them. The odds of seeing them were much lower. Hmm. Now that there are a lot more bluebirds, thanks to bluebird nest boxes, we have a lot more bluebirds and we have a lot more sightings throughout the year.
Okay. Julie writes in, unusual hawk. Yesterday, I saw a bird on top of a telephone pole in Hartford. From the back, it was the size of a hawk. It was black with what looked like a little bit of red in the middle of its back. When I looked in the rearview mirror after I passed it, I could see a tuxedo white marking on the front. I can't find this bird online. Can you help? That's from Julie. I'll throw it to Julie.
Interesting. I'm leaning towards red-tailed hawk.
Okay.
So red-tailed are very variable, with, you know, not just because of age and plumage differences, but like they're different, like there's dark morphs and light morphs and whatnot.
Right.
But one of the very distinctive things about almost all red tails is that they have what we call a belly band. So they have this black band right across the middle of their chest.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I'm guessing, is what she's referring to, is that tuxedo.
All right. Only a couple minutes left here. Let's go to Petersburg, New York, and Kathy. Kathy, you're on. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm calling. I was walking along my field, which is next to the Little Hoosick River in Petersburg. And as I was walking along New Year's morning, a small flock of ducks went flying up the river. And I thought, oh, that's nice. And then not a minute later, an eagle went soaring right behind them. Do eagles eat ducks?
Well, Rich, what do you think?
They sure do, but it has to be a pretty slow duck for them to even catch it. They're not that fast. They're not that agile. But if there is a laggard in the flock, fair game.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, I was afraid of that.
Okay. Well, I mean, there are more.
It doesn't usually happen.
There are more ducks. I mean, it's fine.
It's very unusual. It might have been just a coincidence of them all being in the same place at the same time and wanted to get away from you.
Huh?
Nothing personal.
Well,
that's not very nice. All right, Kathy, I
don't blame them.
I hope you didn't take offense
from
that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. Very quickly, Linda in Gansworth writes in, Julie, I'll throw this to you because we're almost out of time and you can see the clock. Mm-hmm. There is a wren in my yard that hops into my feeder. There is a space between the sides and the top. Is there strange behavior here, or is this wren onto something?
Huh. So it's going into the cracks.
Yeah.
It's probably a Carolina wren at this time of year, and it's probably going for some insect that's up in the crack there somewhere.
In the crack of the feeder.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Richard P. Guthrie, if people want to get in touch with you, sir, how do they do that?
It is using my name, Richard P. Guthrie, Guthrie, @gmail.com.
All right. Fair enough. And Julie Hart, if you're taking emails at this time, mm-hmm. What's a good one for you?
Julie.Hart, that's H-A-R-T, @dec.ny.gov.
All right. Well, Julie Hart, enjoy the winter weather here. And Rich Guthrie, enjoy the winter weather down in Jupiter, Florida. And who knows where you'll be next time. Thank you both for being here. Support comes from Acres, Alden Country Real Estate Services, a holistic transactional real estate brokerage serving the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts, berkshireacres.com for information. Well, thanks to everybody who called in. A lot of emails we didn't get to here on the program, and I apologize. We'll do this show again next month and every month until I expire or get fired. That's the other option. Thanks to Zach Malloy. Just splendid work, sir. Ed Rosen screened the calls. Ed, Happy New Year to you, and thanks for being here. I'm Ray Graff. All right. Tomorrow on the show, SUNY Albany physics professor Kevin Knuth joins us to discuss the latest happenings and scientific research in the world of UFOs, or UAPs, as they call them today. That's tomorrow at 2 p.m. Stand by now for something wonderful.